Guns N' Roses reveal their appetite for destruction, Superman dies on a quest for peace, and The Simpsons debut their longest episode yet in theaters everywhere this week on 30-2010. 2010. Welcome everyone, welcome to the internet's look back into the past of this week, 30, 20, and 10 years ago. That's right, it's 30, 20, 10. And I'm one of your hosts, Chris Antista.
I'm Nuclear Man Dave Rudden.
Nah. Spider Pig fanboy Henry Gilbert.
I'm Diana Goodman. Now get off my plane!
So I'm so excited about this episode. One, we get to, I think, put a cork in constantly bringing up canon films, because it's Apex is basically in the first segment of the show.
Oh, yes.
I get to defend The Simpsons movie, which I cannot believe I've been defending for 10 years.
Yeah, wow.
This 2007 in general should make everyone listening feel very old. That all this stuff that you would just file in your brain as new is a decade old. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
And Sunday morning, I kind of just relaxed and watched the Planet of the Apes. Kind of a weird seating situation. Mm-hmm. It's one of those situations where the layout on the website didn't quite match what they had, because it was like the way they had the setup was like two seats, a little bit of space, two seats, a little bit of a space. So I took seat number, remember this was D4, and I saw D5 and D6 were taken, and I'm like, well, no one's going to take D3. I take D4, and then when I get there, I see the like teenage girls in D5 and D6, and I'm like, I'm not going to sit right next to two teenage girls, that's creepy. So I sit in D3, and then a guy comes in, older and creepier than me, and says, I think I'm D3. I'm like, oh, my mistake.
Let me scoot closer to these teenage girls.
No, well, that was what I... maybe should have done. But what happened was, like, oh, I got D1. I'm sorry. Like, I would have made that mistake. Like, how do you mix up 1 and 3? So I just moved to the very aisle seat. But that means for the next quarter of the movie before I was comfortable thinking, like, nobody's going to have this seat. But I did feel a little bit weird, like, looking at everyone coming in for the next 20 minutes. Like, are these people going to kick me out of my seat? And then the creepy guy's going to see that I lied about my seat twice.
Well, like, that phenomenon...
I just don't want to sit between a creepy dude and two teenage girls. That's
well,
weird.
Well, he can act as a buffer, a guardian angel. Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. In case you don't know what we do, people, hi. Welcome to 30-2010. We're looking at the world of news, pop culture, movies, TV, games. And what this very week, the one you're sitting in a chair, and three windows open up to you. One to 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. 1987, 97, and 2007. As always, we will start with 1987. We are talking about the week of July 21st through July 27th. In the news, July 27th, the first item salvage from the Titanic. The first big expedition since the site was discovered in 1985.
Wow. Yeah.
My lifetime, they discovered the Titanic?
You'd think we knew where it went down and how, but...
No radar, no radio communications.
No, I mean, they sent out, like, distress signals, and, you know, there were ships not that far away, or there was supposedly one, but no one knows it. But, you know, everyone got in the lifeboats who survived, and they sort of drifted for a bit, and they weren't 100% certain where it was. And it's also 2 miles down, so it took a while for the technology to catch up to we actually finding it.
I do think that's one of my first TV memories of, like, being able to see footage from the Titanic wreckage.
I remember an early school memory of watching a video in class was about finding this. And
so it took them like 70-something years to do
is
it.
Is this where we were introduced to Alvin? I still remember his name.
The little boat.
Yeah, the remote-operated submarine divey thingy with a camera on his head.
Alvin! Yeah. Alvin!
And if this hadn't happened, we'd never have the film Titanic. Yeah. Because I think really it was that James Cameron loves going underwater and finding stuff, and that's why he made Abyss. And so he just followed that naturally to, oh, the Titanic's there. Well, I can make a thing about that.
I'm not a guy who gets moved a lot at museums, but I went to a Titanic exhibit, and it had nothing to do with the movie, but seeing like plates from every class's dining room just really for some reason like hit me full force with the idea that, like, these were just people on vacation or traveling or moving to a new world and had no idea they would all die because of one mistake. And it just I'm like holding back tears and looking at all this Titanic memorabilia is it's nuts.
I will say I skipped forward a lot, but there is a real-time sinking of the Titanic video on YouTube. It's almost 3 hours long.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, it's, I mean, this the computer-generated model showing, you know, with timestamps of at what point this does, you know, it hits at this point, keeps going for about 15 minutes, then it stops, and like a little Chiron comes up, it's like, it moves for the last time. And I was like, now I know, and you can watch it slowly tilting down, and it's like, oh, and at this time, someone said that they saw this guy here, and the water was up to this step, and it's like, watching it go, and you're like, it's really well done, though. Yeah, it's really kind of fascinating.
Well, that movie can't top RoboCop this week, July 21st through 27th. We gushed about it last week. It is one of the greatest movies ever, and it's probably good, because all the movies this week kind of stink. That's not true. Hold on. I take that back. Wish You Were Here, a British coming-of-age film starring Emily Lloyd and Tom Bell. That might suck.
It's got really good reviews, but question mark, I couldn't find it. Whatever.
Summer School was one of the first movies I saw, starring Mark Harmon and Christy Alley.
Congratulations. You've been chosen to teach summer school. Oh, I'm not a real teacher. That's all right. These aren't real students. They're unmotivated, irresponsible, not too bright. They'll relate to you.
You in this class, too?
I'm teaching them.
No way!
Bro, I don't know why I thought this movie was going to be like one of those things that was filled with PG-13
music in the background.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be like full of like I don't know 80s thongs and giant hair, but this is it a sex romp or no?
No, it's not a sex romp.
How it's just a light comedy.
Yeah, it's just a wacky comedy. Carl Reiner directed.
Oh, really?
I did not know back in the day. I feel like I saw this a bunch of times, and I'm not really sure why. It's just sort of charming and inoffensive and watchable and cute.
This might be the last Kirstie Alley role before she got Cheers.
Well, I think it is.
That poster that we're seeing on the page here too, it is trying to sell you that it is a sexy
bikini
intro.
Crossing.
It's got a dog with sunglasses on it.
Also out this week, this is a fine movie. This is probably the first biopic I ever liked.
In 1957, Ricardo Valenzuela had his family. His talent and ball tonight. And a dream.
Rock and roll.
The Die in a Plane Crash with Buddy Holly. LDP.
And the Big Pop.
Diner.
This was the best Lou Diamond Phillips thing ever, I'd say.
I don't know. Best was pretty good, too.
Or The Big Hit.
Yes.
What about that?
Yeah.
No, I watched La Bamba.
Courage Under Fire.
Yeah.
But I watched La Bamba 8 million times.
It was on HBO.
I taped it off HBO.
I've said this on 7 episodes in row, but we taped HBO at this time, and this was in it. It introduced me to the idea of the day the music died, which is what...
American Pie is based on the... A plane that took down Richie Valens, Big Bopper, Buddy Holly.
One
more person?
Almost took out Waylon Jennings. He traded his seat.
I'm trading my seat. I'm going to drive there.
And felt really bad for the rest of his life.
He felt cursed the rest of his life.
This was the first movie I think I ever saw that had a sad ending. Like, I didn't watch a lot of... I'm 7 or 8 years old, I'm like... He died. He died, and that ending is so depressing.
He's a teenager. He was 18 something. Yeah, because
unlike the other two, he was on a tiny ascent into superstardom. The other guys were already kind of there.
Yeah. Well, nobody in the last episode we talked about Hairspray and black music not being allowed on the radio, having a Spanish language song was even less likely. It wasn't a big deal in the 50s. It was very different, and so he was crossing over, and it's what makes it a tragedy, because him and Buddy Holly, they could have been the next Elvis. They would have been Elvis instead of Elvis being Elvis. And
yeah.
I was really into this era of stuff too. Like right after this, after I saw this movie as a kid, I forget how. I think my family won. My mom won like tickets to it from a radio contest. It was a Broadway musical about Buddy Holly that also covered this.
Oh, that sounds unwatchable.
Cool. No, Buddy Holly's awesome. Shut up.
Yeah, but a musical about him?
Well, they cast a dude who looks just like him.
He's kind of a
singer. We have the Gary Busey movie. We're good.
They cast a guy who looks just like him, and he sings all the songs, and it ends with, to have a hopeful ending, to not be depressing like La Bamba, it's like, no, Buddy Holly lives, and then the guy sings a new song.
Hey,
it's like,
if he hadn't died in a plane crash, would Lou Diamond Phillips have played him in a major Hollywood movie?
No, probably,
probably not.
So I also remember as a kid,
and as a result, I don't know what Richie Valens looks like.
He's not as cute as looks like Lou LDP. Diamond
there's
Phillips.
There's a scene,
by the way, Filipino, not Mexican.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a scene in the movie. Maybe I'm misremembering it, but isn't there a scene where like a guy kills a snake or like eats a snake or something? I feel like I saw that as a kid, and it's burned in my memory forever.
Movie, this movie definitely like fueled, pardon the pun, like my fear of flying. Like I have a slight fear of flying now, but it's like the movie
you're
is
about to go on a flight today.
Tomorrow. Oh wait, no, today. Holy shit.
You're back.
Yeah, so not only does it end that way, but throughout the movie, like Richie flashes back to this plane collision that happened in the real Richie Valens' life. So it's like he's a kid and he sees a plane crash in the air.
Yeah.
It's insane.
I forgot about that. Speaking of crashing in the air.
Wait. I gotta set this up. So, here's you're ready for the. Here's a moment that will inspire you.
We can't live in fear. I can't stand idly by and watch us stumble into the madness of possible nuclear destruction. And so I've come to a decision. I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons.
Yay! UN applauds!
Right.
So who put this jar of Lex Luthor's piss here?
So Superman 4,
the quest for peace.
So let's start with... Now, I feel like you could make a great movie out of this concept.
Out of this.
For sure.
Especially with the comics and comic movie interest at such its peak right now.
Mm. Right now.
Like, and I was, you know, keep telling people, I discovered superhero entertainment through Batman 1966 over UHF channels with no cable and renting the Superman movies. I love them. Well, I didn't know they got bad every time and worse every
time.
They got
worse every movie. So Superman, Christopher Reeves was the first movie Superman, 1978. Mm-hmm. Huge hit, made him a star. Margot Kidder as Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor is played by Gene Hackman.
Awesome.
Ned Beatty plays his sidekick. And then, so they make the first one, super huge hit. They make the second one. Mm-hmm. It does really well, but it's got some problems.
Well, they filmed him back-to-back, and Richard Donner got fired.
Hugely problematic production.
And then they make the third one. They're like, this should be a Richard Pryor comedy.
Superman doesn't appear for, like, 20 minutes. It's a Richard Pryor movie. Mm-hmm.
And so then Warner wasn't all that interested in another Superman movie.
That's
neither were
be,
the producers.
That's what should be unimaginable to everybody listening. That Warner Brothers just like, fuck it, we don't care about Superman or making Superman movies. We're not going to reboot, reimagine, remake. Yeah. Let's just sell it to somebody else. Did they not own DC at this point?
They did own DC at that point, but they weren't interested in there. It was the model back then of just like, you license your dumb little cartoon character to somebody who'll pay for it, and then you cash the check.
Like what Marvel was doing up until like 10 years ago.
So this was... Okay, so then enter Menachem Golan.
Golan Globus, Electric Boogaloo people.
The Canon Films people. They are starving for legitimacy. They make gross, bloody, sexy movies.
They make largely rip-offs and schlock of...
Total schlock, but that are entertaining in their own way and are... especially profitable.
Yeah.
Because they're cheap.
Yeah. But Golan and Globus, they want respectability. They want to make big Hollywood films, but they don't get how expensive that is.
Yeah.
So in the mid-80s, they license four things. And they make three movies. They make Over the Top, the arm wrestling movie that they think will be a huge hit. And they pay Sly Stallone doesn't want to do it. And they pay him an ungodly amount of money then just to do it. They get the He-Man rights. They're like, kids love these He-Man toys, but it takes them 4 years to make it. No kid cares about He-Man in 88. No, it was 86.
And it's He-Man in the real world, which is
don't
want to see that.
Well, because that's much cheaper.
Yes.
And Then we get to, they also license Spider-Man and they never make that. You can hear all about that on our Spider-Man laser side. By the way, they have the rights to Spider-Man and Superman at the same time.
That's insane.
So they get the Superman rights for a lot of money. And they're like, yeah, we're going to make a big special effects movie. When they find out how much that actually costs, they're like, well, then we're going to spend half that. And so the movie looks like shit. It has worse special effects than 78, almost 10 years old.
Christopher Reeve would he'd reflect on it. Because I think he did the movie in order to get another movie made.
He did it to get Street Smart made that we talked about a while ago. That was Morgan Freeman's breakout role. So something good came of this.
But
it's not this movie.
But he talks about the script and it's like, well, you know, this is a great scene. Is Superman coming through the rain, giving an empowering speech to a bunch of people, but we can't afford the rain machine, the extras, or the outdoor permit. So we're going to put this in a warehouse. You'll say it to no one, and there'll be no weather. The shot is ruined.
Yeah, he tells the story of, like, that scene's in the UN before he goes there. He lands and walks down the street to the UN, and Christopher Reeve talked about, like, if I was filming this with Richard Donner, we would have done it on the streets in New York and have been the real street. Here it was, an empty street nowhere with no one looking at me.
There's like six people waiting on the steps of the UN. Like,
and there's also a ridiculous special effects of him trying to put all the nukes in a net in outer space. Like, it looks like dog shit.
The effects are terrible. They reuse so much shit over and over.
It's such a tragedy. And like the fight at the end on the moon,
how do you fail? Slow motion.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
But
this cost them so much money that they were about to produce the Spider-Man movie at the same time, but this was sucking all their money away. They're like, shit, we just got to do it. And this should have taught Golden Globus what their problem was. It was just like, no, you can't make a Warner Brothers blockbuster. Like, you don't have the money.
Yeah.
Just make another Chuck Norris film about murdering Arabs. Just do that.
Yeah, have him kick people to death.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Everything in this movie is wrong.
Oh, shit. Poor Margot Kidder, too.
Like, yeah, what I want to say, though, is that I feel like almost like Red Sun, like, there could be a really good comic book run of the idea of Superman unilaterally deciding, you people are idiots, I'm taking all your nukes away.
Yeah.
And the fucking chaos that would ensue. Mm. Instead, everyone's like, yay. And it's like, you really think, like, Israel or Pakistan would be like, yay.
Who is this Superman?
Or like, either they're saying, fuck
America
you.
America wouldn't be happy.
Fuck you. Or they're going to say, yeah, we're for that. We're going to save two. And then India would be like, well, I think they might be saving two. We're going to save four. Mm. And it's like, the whole thing is stupid. It's literally, it's fascism. He's just telling democratically elected leaders what they're doing, and everyone's like,
it's like, well, that's if you view Superman as a human and not a god or a perfect guy who makes every right choice.
Oh my god, what's that? What's that comic? Not inconceivable.
Oh,
Irredeemable. Which is a Superman deciding, like, I am better at, I'll be better at ruling the world than any of you people.
I'm a better human than all of you. You people all suck, and I'm going to kill 5 million.
That is
a great
comic about that very thing. When Superman decides, like, your diplomacy sucks, I'm going to be better at this. I'll be your Gort.
And there's been official Superman stories that deal with why he doesn't do this and why he's like, I got to let humanity do what they're going to do and just help them along the way. I can't dictate their lives.
Red Sun comes to mind where it's like, what if he landed in Russia and he was almost forced to enter the political arena?
He takes over for Stalin after Stalin's death.
Yeah. Red Sun also has Ducky.
Oh,
John
Cryer.
Lex Luthor's son.
Oh, God. Yeah. This film
son
is
or nephew.
Trash.
He is
Lenny
so...
Lenny Luthor.
He's super annoying. And then, Lex Luthor.
Hackman's barely in it.
Yeah, but he gets one of Superman's hairs. He throws some of his DNA, and some cloth into one of the nukes. And then that gets thrown into the sun, and that creates Nuclear Man in an outfit who's got evil Lee press on nails that will give you cancer or something, and they have a really slow dumb fight. And
it's really bad.
Everything
it's
is
hilarious.
So,
it looks like a Godzilla
bad.
Movie because they're on the moon, so they're trying to recreate the gravity.
It's terrible so farewell to Christopher Reeves, who really was a great Superman.
Great dude.
And a great guy. It's very sad, and I'm just glad they made this. This tells me how happy I am Golden Globus never got to make a Spider-Man movie.
You remember 11 years ago, Superman Returns is it the third Richard Donner, Christopher Reed Superman movie that undoes the damage of 3 and 4. It takes place in the universe of the 78 movie.
As far as they're concerned, which is good. Oh, boy.
We don't have a lot of film retcons, so I love that exists, even though that movie was pretty much not retcon, but it barely exists now.
Yeah,
it's a movie people didn't like, and now has no companion.
So, yeah, if you just want to watch a bad film, give it a watch.
The bright side is you can't really buy the 78 Superman, which is tons of fun, without Quest for Peace, because they would never have the balls to sell it separately.
Mm.
It comes with, it usually comes as a package deal.
Yeah, if you want one, you got to give us $30, and we'll just give you four discs.
But moving into TV of 1987, what is...
Almost nothing was on TV.
July 21st through the 27th.
Yeah, so July 21st was the Miss Teen USA pageant. The only thing that's interesting about it is that the second runner-up was Bobby Brown, who was the model for Warrant's Cherry Pie video and would famously date first a member of Warrant and then date Tommy Lee. And she was the woman left. She was engaged to Tommy Lee, and Tommy Lee left her 3 days later. He married Pam Anderson.
Well, that's his prerogative.
That's not the same Bobby Brown.
I know, I'm joking.
But so here's her in her more innocent days.
Bobby Brown, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
You can keep watching that to just hear 5 minutes of women shouting their name, 50 different women
name
shouting
and location.
Their name.
Oh, but the hair. The hair is magnificent.
Kentucky Fried Hair as far as the eye can see.
Oh, my.
It's like
from Louisiana, Shug.
My town,
I'm going to make sweet tea for everybody.
What was the rationale behind that hairstyle? Was it just to, create your own halo?
I mean, it's like its own hat. It gives you more height. It gives you more body.
There's a woman on that show, Glow, who the front of her hair is puffed up. Like to Conan O'Brien heights, that it just looks like she rubbed Ben Stiller's sperm through the top of her hair.
I mean, it's the same world that had, the big puffy shoulders too. It was just about more height and huge,
bigger.
I should not be giving it shit because if you've never seen me before, I am the perfect 80s man. I can't survive as attractive in these modern times with straight hair and smooth chest. I would have been a god in the 80s.
Yeah, you need the big hair to scare off predators.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, that's it for TV.
Predator was out a couple weeks ago.
That is it for TV. Games. These are some cool games.
Yeah, a couple noteworthy things.
The
biggest one to me, at least, is Rygar.
Yeah.
This big adventure on the NES. They had an arcade version, which is actually quite different, but...
Yeah.
I've never ever beat this game,
it's
but had
fuck.
A hell of a time trying.
It's from the Ninja Gaiden people, yes. Tecmo, and it's just a ninja with a yo-yo.
Yeah, they
a Greek ninja.
They remade this on the Wii.
They just updated.
It had one worthy update, and the series is kind of dead. But this was one of those secret favorites of all NES fans. Rygar was great.
And also this week was Section Z, which is a side-scrolling shooter from Capcom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know that much about it. Solomon's Key, a puzzle game, I believe, on NES, which you also played
sort
a bit
of.
Rygar's theme is so close to the birthday.
Rygar was my jam.
Yeah, Rygar's great.
Yep. Oh, I forgot to mention, also in news, I turned 10.
Diana turns 10!
Yeah, we hit a birthday week.
Oh, wait a minute, then. I'm doing math.
Don't do math.
We have a birthday to celebrate soon, then, don't we?
Don't do math.
But dude, this is one of the biggest releases in music. I'm not sure.
This is a great music week.
Yeah. Alone by Heart is still number one. We closed out 87 with that last week. You got new albums from Starship, No Protection, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now from the Mannequin soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Set the Night to Music by In My Tribe by 10,000 Maniacs. Holy shit. Dream Evil by Duo as well.
But
inarguably.
Everyone stand back.
Yeah.
The big moment is here.
Please, Diana, take it.
Appetite for Destruction is released.
Yes.
This was so huge. Mm-hmm. I can't even explain to the youngsters what it was like when this came out.
Mm-hmm.
This blew up immediately. And it's so interesting. Guns N' Roses is in that perfect zone between actual metal and hair metal.
Yeah.
And because hair metal was starting to take over here. I mean, we've already had, we got Warren, we have Def Leppard, we have all this stuff.
Yeah, a ton of hair metal, but it's basic ass pop.
Yeah.
And it doesn't critically reach over and it's a palatable
but this
music.
Is some of that Lipstick City shit that was getting really big in the 80s.
And it's funny because I think from the Guns N' Roses early beginnings, you can see them as a lipstick. Hair perms.
Oh, Axl's hair is huge in the music video.
Yeah,
but they
dropped that relatively quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think they bounced back and forth between, they were a little more harder metal, kind of heading into punk, and then they kind of glam themselves up a little bit, and they realize, no, no, that's not what people want. There's plenty of this glamorous metal out here. No, let's just fucking rock.
And this album, and I don't even know that we need to explain it to the kids, because odds are you fucking own it.
Yeah.
It sold 30 million copies. Woof. It's in the top 10 of the highest selling records of all time.
Back when going platinum meant you were already a millionaire, they went 30 times platinum.
The public anxiously awaited for 20 years for another Guns N' Roses album solely because of the success of Appetite.
Well, no, it would be 5 years till Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But even then, I think the world thought, if you look back, we were nuts that the news wouldn't stop reporting about Chinese democracy.
Yeah. It is crazy to think to that now, but this is a classic Guns N' Roses GNR lineup as well. Mm-hmm. Axl / Iggy Stradlin.
Izzy Stradlin. Yeah. Good stuff.
I hate good listening times. To this now. it just because it's gotten radio play every second, every day since 1987.
I remember on I Love the 80s, I had a mind-blowing moment of seeing D. Schneider, who I think was mad that Guns N' Roses made him look not cool anymore. He talked about how in the music video for Welcome to the Jungle, Axl Rose does the same dance that Davy Jones in the Monkees does. And
true.
He's like blown up his spot like, you're ripping off the Daydream Believer dance there, Axl. You're not cool. And you know he was screaming that in bars in the 80s, just like, he's not cool. That's for the Monkees. Fuck you.
Yeah, but just, I mean, try to put it in context. Think of Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now from Mannequin and how over-processed pop was. And then this shows up and it's just dudes fucking wailing.
Yeah.
It was a big thing.
And like all the songs on it, I'm not even sure that I ever owned this album physically, but it's like most of these songs were hits. Welcome to the Jungle, Night Train, Mr. Brownstone, Paradise City, My Michelle, Sweet Child of Mine.
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
Rocket Queen. I love Rocket Queen.
Jesus, there's so much on this album. I don't know. It's almost like we have to. If aliens have to know what music is, we're going to have to force them to listen to Guns N' Roses.
I just made an I'm old discovery.
What's that? Goody.
So it was 15 years between the release of this album and their comeback at the VMAs.
Right.
And it's been 15 years since that happened.
Oh my God. Yes. The debut of Buckethead?
Yep.
I remember Jimmy Fallon going like, during the show, he's like, if you're hearing some rumors, it's true. Wait for it, guys.
Say TiVo. Because TiVos are a thing.
It was the last time Jimmy Fallon was legitimately excited for anything. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
He's the funniest person in the world.
I'm going to tussle Axl Rose's hair. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Stop it. Leave Jimmy Fallon alone. The world needs a cute Steve Brule. But Appetite for Destruction. I think it's just one of those albums I remember talking to people. If we had to do a Laser Time discussion point, what album have you bought twice? And I know a ton of people end up saying Appetite for Destruction. Mm-hmm. I had the tape, and then I had to buy the CD, and then I had to buy the iTunes version. Because it's that ubiquitous to me. I'm from Florida. This is the soundtrack to Rednecks. It's not so much country. It is Guns N' Roses and fucking Candlebox. Like, you go down to a sinkhole, and you're diving into a reservoir from the flatbed of a truck. You will hear some goddamn Candlebox. But I don't know. I don't mean to disrespect the album at all, because this was amazing. I remember discovering it in the early 90s. And like, Jesus, this band rules. Wasn't around for their heyday, though. Wasn't paying attention. I was too into the Chipmunks movie. <that sound>. But we will close out the 1987 segment with Welcome to the Jungle, of
You're
course.
Gonna die.
Yeah, but when we come back, 1997, people.
Welcome.
Ahoy hoy, everybody, this is Bob Mackey,
Chris Antista,
Henry Gilbert,
and when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons, only on the Laser Time Podcast Network,
where we occasionally talk sports.
Daryl!
When we throw people under the bus, name names, like the insidious
Mr. Black.
And we're the one podcast that will never sell out to foreign interests.
Ooh, the Germans are mad at me. I'm so scared. Ooh,
the Germans.
Stop it.
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, so okay, we're coming with Mr. Brownstone just because another awesome track off Appetite for Destruction, but it doesn't get the radio play. Yeah. And it's about heroin, and that's always fun. And we have a theme going. We had a song about heroin last week. So
is that a Night Train or about heroin? Or is that just alcoholism?
Probably.
I'm sure they all are about heroin on some level.
Because I'll be Mr. missing you still number
awesome.
One. And that's
So no 97 means you're taking this thing because it's just kind of it's
pretty boring.
Be missing you will not go away.
And I'm looking. Diana has had listed the albums, and I'm just reading them off. But I have never heard of any of these new albums by the creator with a K, yeah. Outcast. No, not that Outcast. Not the fun one. The Strange Engine by Marillion
again? Yeah.
And the Ocean Machine, Biomech by. Devin Townsend.
Favorite Dreamcast game.
Yeah, that sounds like anime.
Yeah, I think next week's a pretty good week. Mm-hmm. But this week in 97, for some reason, just...
The world was too busy celebrating the 10th anniversary of Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
In the news, July... what are we in? July 21st to the 27th?
Yeah.
Autumn Jackson found not guilty of trying to extort found guilty of trying to extort $40 million from Bill Cosby. What is this about?
Here we go. So... Autumn Jackson was a young lady whose mom said that she had an extramarital affair with Bill Cosby. She has said other things since then. She claimed she had an affair. Honestly, I should say since then, she's claimed she had an affair, but she claimed she was also drugged and raped because that's what everyone has been saying.
She calls that a Cosby courtship.
But Autumn Jackson had been getting money from him for like her whole life and basically said, no, I want more money. Or I'm going to sell my story to the tabloids and try to extort him for $40 million. She's like, look, you want a copy of this agreement with National Enquirer? I'm going to ruin everything. Everyone thinks you're so family friendly and so great, and this will ruin your reputation.
Irony. I have a weird relationship with that.
This is the last time I have trouble with women.
Because as a little kid, I did... a biography on Bill Cosby. And so since every year you had a new teacher, I did that biography every year for 5 years, updating it with new research. So this news in the early 90s was available. And it seemed, you could say that Cosby and his lawyer suppressed the news, but it was weird. I encountered the news. I'm like, well, that's not going to the book report. That'd be a real bummer. And so it seemed like some people were reporting this, but I think the public chose not to believe it.
Yeah, I think people believe that this is a rando trying to extort him, and it's possible. I don't know if they even ever did a DNA test to find out whether or not she's... But he did have an affair with her mom. He was sending her money for like 20 years. And then she got together with a couple other scumbags and decided they were going to try to cash out. And they had a cool FBI sting, and she went to jail for like a year or so.
Damn. For something he was probably guilty of.
Yeah, but this kind of thing is why when the first allegations of sexual abuse came out, it was sort of like, well, she was probably just trying to extort him. Because
That
had already happened.
No, it really depressed me seeing some of his old friends come to his side of saying like, I bet it's just a woman faking it to get money. It's like, 50 women?
Yeah. 50 women, all fakers. And they're doing it because it was so successful this time. What? Like, it didn't work.
The Dave Chappelle in his recent thing, he had a lot of good Cosby material, but just the shock for him, he said, like, it's like finding out, like, chocolate ice cream did this.
July 25th, K.R. Narayana becomes the first untouchable to become India's president.
Yep.
Beat out Sean Connery, I believe.
That's a reference to an old episode. Low-caste person becoming
a
president.
Didn't know that.
Yep. It's the Indian dream.
So,
Speaking
of presidents. Yay. So let's go in ascending order here. Because this is tragic, Brett's not here. But I know for a fact, neither he nor I have seen this movie. The second to last Ernest film.
I thought this was a Simpsons joke.
No. Well, it was.
Ernest goes somewhere cheap. Stupid. Oh,
it goes somewhere cheap. But this Ernest goes to Africa.
Oh, no.
Shot on location in Johannesburg, South Africa. Okay. The second to last Ernest film. And yes, sadly, it's cringy. You want to see Ernest introduce himself to some Africans?
Oh, no.
No.
Hey, homies, what's happening? What it is, bro?
Oh, no.
Doing a cool handshake.
Shibop, shibop, doo-wop, doo-wop. Quang dang,
shamalamading.
Can
we stop? Can we stop, please?
I know. I didn't want to know this either.
No. What happened in 1997.
Well, think of the audience they were making it for.
All right.
Racist children?
I will say at least.
Racist children from the 50s.
The joke is on Ernest in that scene. Mm-hmm. That the regular
We turned it off before. And the guy takes his cane and just knocks him out. Like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, so the Africans are having no... They're not
none
humoring
Ernest.
It.
Oh, and he does brown face in the movie as well.
Why is he in Africa in the first place?
He gets kidnapped and brought there, involving some jewels. It's
isn't
a typical
one,
comedy club.
I think that one starts in, like, he... Isn't there some ridiculous action in a house that's being built? And then he gets, like, a nail in the head? This is a Brett
question. All those, like, fucking pal-converted... Mm. Latter-day Ernest movies run together because they're hard to watch.
I know, but look, Jim Varney, death was coming. He needed to make the money.
I'll stand by the man as a fucking treasure. I love Jim Varney.
I love Jim Varney so much.
I avoid these movies because I don't want to. I don't want to know.
I don't want to think about that scene.
Still had a good Simpsons appearance ahead of him.
Yeah.
Grift of the Magi?
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Bringing us into comedies that I would say our younger audience would tell you holds up even better.
Sorry. Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
From Nickelodeon Studios.
Remember when we thought Caleb Mitchell was the breakout star of all that?
I know, it's crazy. All that was... It was a okay SNL for children, but like I'd never ever watch it.
You can't go back and watch them.
It's unwatchable, but it was what if you dumbed down sketches for the stupidest kid in the world? That's what all that was. And so Good Burger was...
What if In Living Color was made in Branson, Missouri?
And that's what Good Burger... So Good Burger was the most popular sketch on it, for sure.
It was. So
and Keenan and Kel were big enough that they got their own spin-off sitcom on it. Nickelodeon.
And it's nuts to look at Kenan Thompson in this film because he's a guy I kind of see every week thanks to SNL. And he's super young but still looks the same.
He's a funny dude. Well, meanwhile, Kel Mitchell is
funny too.
Yeah, he's a good character.
We all thought he was going to be the one to hit the megastardom, and obviously Nickelodeon did too. Mm-hmm. Betting on him. This is Nickelodeon's second film, but the first film they made based on one of their own properties. Mm-hmm. Like this predates Rugrats and SpongeBob and all that. I don't know that they made a ton of other live action movies, but Harry the Spy
was before this.
But I think the last film distributed by Fox eventually would just be all Viacom joined because they own them outright by that point. But Good Burger, I know a lot of our younger listeners love all that.
Yeah, it's really cheap. It is a snobs versus slobs movie, like straight out of the 80s, but in 1997.
Yeah, it's like a big burger company that opens across the street from them, I think.
Yeah, Mondo Burger.
It's going to shut down Good Burger.
And it features most of the cast of all that, I believe.
Yeah, pretty much. And then Keenan works at the Mondo Burger and then goes to work at Good Burger and is going to help take him down. It's that awkward thing that happens sometimes in sketch comedy films where they're like, well, in the original sketch, there's really only two, or in Good Burger's case, one consistent thing. So they have to make up an excuse for the co-star to be in it because he's... Like, Keenan was just one of the guys who would eat a Good Burger. He'd be in the original sketches.
Best example of that is, like, Will Ferrell in that period of SNL movies. Totally. Like, he's the most famous guy in the show, but his characters aren't.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So except for Night at Roxbury, but everything else.
But they have to manufacture a new role for Will Ferrell to be in Superstar and the Ladies Man.
Yeah. Totally.
But
Good Burger. That's where Keenan was as well.
Good Burger, still out there, people.
For the kiddos out there, and by kiddos I mean 27-year-olds who saw this.
I weirdly remember, I think it was like a Family Guy joke where it's like, well, what'd you find in his corpse? A couple things. Copy of Good Burger on DVD. And I just thought it was the most random, funny thing.
I just know someone...
He's quite random.
That guy wrote the Nickelodeon but put his foot in his mouth by like saying, like, what about Clarissa and Keenan and Kelly? He's like, those aren't the fucking same as classic Nickelodeon. That shit sucks.
And I'm like, starring white boys.
And I'm like, you're right. And then he said a bunch of other negative shit. But he is right because like all that and Clarissa Explains It All were all ripoffs of shitty formulas already happening. Ren and Stimpy and Pete and Pete were better.
Those were also 3 to 4 years beforehand, so it was more in our zeitgeist.
Well, I'm just saying Pete and Pete is the best live action show to come out of Nickelodeon in the 90s.
It's way better than all that, by a
continent mile. I'll say that cliche.
But yes, the dude in that slimed book, he then said some telling things about like, It just feels like minstrelsy. He said that about any show that didn't star white people. He was just like, oh, it just
those shows are exceptionally bad. And I understand having nostalgia for them, but they are awful.
You mean like Clarissa?
So,
I mean, yeah.
But yeah, Keenan and Kel.
My brother meme?
I can never watch it because it is so broad.
Oh, but I actually do like a couple episodes of Keenan and Kel.
They do. Oh,
my own soda. Ow, my own soda.
But it's not for me because, as if you do the math, I was 20 this week.
Can you believe?
I forgot to do the math. You're probably on the FBI watch list if you're watching this.
Can you believe this was made by the head of the class guys? Like two head of the class actors were the creators of it.
No, the fat guy and nerd.
Fat guy and nerd from head of the class.
Because they would always pop up in all that and just like, oh, there's that guy I recognize in a random scene when they need an adult for one thing.
Yep.
And the biggest movie of the week is a movie I still have not seen. I have never wanted to see it.
Oh, it's real good.
Harrison Ford and Gary Oldman in Air Force One.
My husband will not negotiate.
His wife, his daughter, I think he'll negotiate.
How the hell did this happen? How the hell did they get Air Force One?
Your national security.
Is that the cut off at the titular line? Yeah. Where does he say, get off my plane?
I saved that clip for you.
Oh, yeah. So
let's talk about it. All right. Yeah. First of all, Vice President Glenn Close.
Oh, is
I'm
really?
Super for that.
I forgot I'm that was a plot.
Super for that. And no one makes a big deal out of it.
And that still is science fiction at this point. A woman that close to being president? No way.
So is Air
it's
Force
Die Hard
One,
on a plane.
Is Die Hard on a plane. Again, so was Passenger 51.
Yep.
Or 57. But Wolfgang Peterson, who knows how to make some fucking action, especially in enclosed spaces.
With Harrison Ford.
He made Does Both, for fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. It's so stupid. Obviously, it's stupid.
It's very stupid. The president could beat up these like highly trained terrorists.
Well, and they have to make a point that like he was an Army Ranger or a SEAL or something. He was a super killer guy. He can kick some ass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gary Oldman's ridiculously broad. The Russian accent is so adorable. Couple das, couple nyets.
I also remember as an early UFC fan, one of the first UFC fighters to get big from Russia. He's in this movie as a tough guy too. It's
Oleg Tokhtarov.
Yeah, Tokhtarov. That's it. Thank you.
I think the weird thing about Air Force One, I didn't double check this, but it is it might be the most successful non-Lucasfilm Harrison Ford film ever. Because if you look at his career, he's in some of the most iconic popcorn action movies of all time, and then in Mosquito Coast, anyone? Witness?
Yes.
Regarding
yes.
Henry? I know, but,
seven,
he, but
eight,
he doesn't.
Seven Nights.
What Lies Beneath? He's not in a lot of action movies.
What about the Jack Ryan 2?
Oh, yeah, yes. Those are probably huge. But this
Patriot Games and
but this one wasn't working with a license. It was an established character.
That's
and it
true.
Was number one for weeks.
Yep.
And a huge hit on video.
It's just a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
I watch it.
It's, you know.
I used to shit on Face Off, and I revisited that for the show. And it was one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah, it's like a hangover movie. It's like you got a hangover a Sunday afternoon. Yeah, you can watch this.
I think use executive decision at this point. It's got the same premise.
Yes, there is the big scene is when he... And it all takes place on the Air Force One, which I guess if you're not American, you don't know. It's the...
Back before you didn't want to see it blow up.
It is... Oh, man. That is the plane the president flies on. Air Force Two is usually where the VP is, right?
Right. Technically, any... And it becomes like a little moment in the movie. Any flying thing the president on is Air Force One.
Okay.
So yeah, that becomes a thing.
So if he's like paragliding, is that Air Force One?
That's now Air Force One.
Nice.
And then he paraglides into like the back of a Cessna and is holding onto it.
So
that's now Air Force One.
If the president's playing the Butterfinger Jet Moto, that becomes Air Force One.
Okay, so then the biggest moment is
obviously we gotta have a big old punch up, and then you've gotta tell him off.
Get off my plane.
Spoilers. Fuck you.
He broke his neck before he threw Gary Oldman out of the plane.
Just to make it sure you know Gary Oldman's dead. So it's like the president murdered someone in a movie.
He murders a couple people.
And then it's not treated as a political thing at all. Like the president murdering people on planes. Like
it's
all self-defense. The president does it on a plane. It's not
it's
illegal.
Not illegal. It was an international error.
I saw Harrison Ford was doing interviews for something during...
I'm guessing reluctantly.
At some point during Donald Trump running for president, and Donald Trump had made a statement of like, it'd be like the movie Air Force One, my presidency. Mm-hmm. And then Harrison Ford had to reply like, Don, It's a movie. It's not real, yep. Donald.
And we got some William H. Macy in there, too. That's fun. And I think we got some Dean Stockwell. Yeah, it's a good time.
All right, I'm sold. Let's cut the show short and I'll go watch Air Force
One. William H. Macy after Mystery Men. a couple weeks ago.
And Kel, moving into the television of 97, July 21st to the 27th. On the 27th, holy shit, really?
You already have covered this.
It's a 30-20-10-ception. We already talked about the finale, now we're talking about the premiere.
Wow.
Yeah, so
Stargate SG-1 debuts on Showtime. We talked about its finale. And I think we said all that before. It's the first example of, like, there's been a show on for 10 years and I couldn't name a single character on it. Like, how have I never seen this?
So when it premiered, it had Richard Dean Anderson, MacGyver, on it. He was on it until season 8 and was written off the show because he's like, I just don't want to do this anymore. I got new kids. I'm a 60-year-old dad. So he left in season 8, but in season 1, it was a Showtime show. For a few seasons it was, and it went to Sci-Fi Channel.
I think they ended up merging and becoming kind of the having the same parent company.
So in the first episode, the creators of the show didn't want to do it, but Showtime was like, you're on Showtime, put some nudity in here. So in the first episode, the queen of the Egypt planet does full frontal.
Nice.
And it gets edited out of all future Showtime, or all future airings of it. People say, like, I've never seen this. And so the other interesting thing is that Dean Devlin, when he makes the show, he changes the name of every character by one letter to be like, no, we didn't recast James Spader's
part. I'm not paying
parts.
James Spader.
I added an extra L to his name. This isn't Kurt Russell's character. And
Stargate is one of the most unremarkable movies ever made.
It was a big deal its first year.
I forget why I was doing research. Most of you don't know, nor will you ever have to know, how big the Stargate universe is. How many things have Stargate colon this. It's dozens.
It's pretty bonkers.
Atlantis is a spinoff to this show. It has a huge universe.
10 years of making a thing that, like, nobody I knew talked about.
And we're all sci-fi nerds. Yeah. That's what I didn't understand.
I remember going to, when I got my job at a mom and pop video store, and seeing just, like, at that point, 8 on the shelf of Stargate. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
I think I said that before. My old roommate, Tyler Wilde, we're recording the Tyler Wilde Memorial Studio. His mother, every year, would give him Stargate, the complete blank season, and they just sat wrapped for a decade. I don't even
know
where they are now.
He's building a Stargate out of
them. Yes, he's going to build a little igloo out of Stargate DVDs. But that is it for television this week. It's slow summer, and it's a slower week for games because Dave put that in there, bolded and underlined. None. We will close out with I'm a Dude from Good Burger.
I'm a dude. You're a dude. He's a dude. We're all dudes. That's a very inclusive song.
It is. Indeed, it is. We're
dudes
all
can
dudes.
Be any gender.
All right, dude. Stay tuned for 2007. Sit tight, people.
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to find out if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of July 21st through 27th, you know, it's another kind of slow one, even though it's the middle of summer. 75 years ago this week, 1942, I found nothing. Literally nothing out. I don't know why. I guess probably the Yankees was doing well, something. Anyway, 1967, 50 years ago this week, we got Love, L-U-V, with Jack Lemmon and Elaine May, which I've heard is okay, but then if you try to look for it, like if you Google L-U-V, you just get the stock price of Southwest Airlines, and it's kind of frustrating now. There's also the first Ultraman movie, in 67, which is just 4 TV episodes stuck together. Not really. And also out of Japan, King Kong Escapes, directed by Ichiro Honda. So that's kind of fun if you want to go for, you know, kind of kaiju and King Kong put together. But I felt like saying on my birthday, July 21st, 1967, so 10 years before I was born, Basil Rathbone passed away, and he is one of my absolute favorite character actors. Usually play bad guys in stuff like Robin Hood and Captain Blood, stuff with Errol Flynn, because he was supposed to be like the best fencer in Hollywood. So those are my two recommendations. Also, we have coming up, he was a really good Sherlock Holmes. And in 42, we're going to get a couple more of those. So, you know, if you want, there's so many Sherlock Holmeses. But if you want just like a good straight ahead barking at people, very clipped accent, very rigid kind of guy, I always liked him as Sherlock Holmes. So yeah, I'm going to recommend Adventures of Robin Hood and Captain Blood, because they're fun and the piratey and there's awesome fencing and I like Basil Rathbone. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
The Yeah Yeah Yeahs with Down Boy. I'm guessing that's out this week. Mm.
From their album Isis. Oh, I mean, Is.
God damn it, how unfortunate. You'll never guess Umbrella, still number one.
Jesus.
New albums, though, by Billy Ray Cyrus, which we all call Cyrus at his request from here on out.
Boy, no.
Home at last. Planet Earth, Prince's 32nd studio album. Is out this week.
Nine more years of music after that.
Underclass Hero by Sum 41 and The Con by Tegan and Sarah.
Love that album. I finally saw an album I've heard before. I stopped listening to music in 2007 except for Tegan and Sarah. I love them. They are lesbian twins who make amazing dancey poppy music. I just love it. It makes me so happy. They are twins and both lesbians. They're not with each other, folks. It's not gross.
I'm just astonished. Sum 41 has an album called Underclass Hero when they're probably in their 30s.
They're in their 30s and millionaires.
They're quite upper class at this point.
We're in 2007, people. Yes. July 21st to the 27th in the news on July 25th. Pratibha?
Sure, why not?
Patel becomes the first woman president in India. Did you have a book of India just open?
It just happened to line up that way, that's when they do the elections.
You can elect a woman president?
I just like pointing out every time someone else has had a woman president.
Yeah, there's been, you know, we talk a lot about how backwards Muslim-dominated countries are.
Nope.
And then it's like, well, we don't. I'm saying people talk about that a lot on the news, and then it's like, well, many have had female heads of state before America has. For a country that seems to hate women so much.
I think if you try, you should lock them up or threaten to.
Turn into a shirt.
Let's bring it into movies because, oh my God, 2007 is going to let me talk about a bunch of cartoons that I like. Oh, goodness. Art in the movie theater, Arctic Tale, a Disney Arctic documentary. Seriously, I can't believe they do this. All made up of used and unused Planet Earth footage, I believe.
They just cut together. It's reality show stuff. It's reality show fake narratives, but they do it with nature footage.
Yeah,
which
it's real weird.
They've been doing that for a million years. Like Disney was making film. Lots of kids' films were like
perpetuating
that.
Myths and legends.
Yep. Making up new ones about lemmings.
So this isn't a snow-themed version of Shark's Tale.
It's about that time old Mr. Coyote got a hankering for blueberry pie. Also out this week, No End in Sight. Who cares?
Oh, no, that's a really good documentary just about how badly we fucked up Iraq. Quickly. Basically, we came in with, you know, first the army and then the bureaucrats and had no idea what we were doing and, you know, fired the entire Iraqi army. Well, now those guys got to make money somehow. And so now there's insurgencies.
Why did Obama do that?
Well, I know. It's so sad Obama did that to all of us. And
it's a hard one to watch because it's like you just want a time machine so bad.
Yeah.
It's like, we just did everything wrong.
Well, fortunately, 10 years later, we're not feeling the effects of that anymore. And it's just good. What I also love about it is hearing from liberals, in quotes, who were pro the war, and they're just like, well, who could have seen this coming? Like, everybody who was protesting it when it was about to happen. Millions of people you didn't want to listen to because you
including
thought,
including Colin Powell.
Well, they're also just like, we got to go to war, everybody.
All right. No Reservations, not the Anthony Bourdain version.
Nope.
Based on a German film, I believe, Catherine Zeta-Jones and Aaron Eckhart. And
those are handsome people I'd see in a romantic comedy. Yeah. Sure.
And attractive 40-year-olds in the world.
Yep.
Lindsay Lohan, one of her last stabs at a big screen stardom.
This movie's hilarious.
I'd watch this before the Canyons.
She looks just like her, but it ain't Aubrey. She's living inside a world she made up.
You let both of us die just to keep your secret?
You should be dead by now.
I know.
Wait, we gotta hear the line.
She's about to say it. She's about to say it.
I know who killed me.
Ooh, yeah. There we go.
This is a legendary bad movie.
Oh, it's bad in so many ways I was not expecting. I mean, they sold it as like, it's a sexy thriller. Mm-hmm. Lindsay Lohan's all grown up. Here she is, bunch of footage of her being a stripper. Yeah.
Yeah, without taking her clothes off.
Right. And it's about like.
You want to see her naked, watch the canyons.
Yeah, it's like.
I think Machete as well.
Machete?
She's new to that.
Yeah.
Everybody gets naked.
I do want to see that.
It's supposed to be some sort of psychological thriller where it's like. She's this perfect teenage girl, and she goes missing, and then she's found, and she says she's somebody else. But how could that be? And there's they're stripping again, and sexiness, and it's like, okay, I'm getting that. But then, like, when she's found again, she doesn't have a leg, so like they give her a bionic leg. It's like a robot leg, and she has to charge it up. And at one point, there's like a chase scene, and her leg runs out of juice. And it's so dumb.
And that technology does not exist in real life.
So dumb.
Yeah, battery powered legs definitely don't exist.
About a leg that's no longer battery powered is just a peg leg, right? You can still use it.
Exactly. It would have been better than that.
It's so stupid.
So doesn't this have a dumb twist ending?
Of course it does.
Are you willing to ruin it?
So she was her twin or something.
They are
right?
Twins. Yeah, big fucking surprise.
Are you
kidding? A secret twin, but
they're
she doesn't remember. Twins.
Secret twins. Fuck you.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
That is
no
awful.
Nobody's gonna watch this. So
you couldn't get away with that
twin.
On a soap opera.
Oh, God,
good
so
lord.
Dumb.
But also, this is great.
Oh no.
In the spirit of Soul Plane, we have an update on a classic with hip hop.
At Carolina Pines, the membership is reserved, but they're about to meet a man.
I'm in search of an application, sir.
How are you with a shovel?
Shovel?
Did he call you a...
Whoa! Yeah, that's not the worst thing Jeffrey Jones has done.
No. This is a weird period of time where it's like, we all know what Jeffrey Jones did. Why is he still in movies?
Because he's awesome.
Yeah, but he's also a pedo.
No,
so.
But I love
he
him
got
so
downgraded,
much.
Though. Yes.
I wish I could have a kid and give
but
him
it was
Jeffrey
a star
Jones.
Vehicle no. For Big Boy of yeah. Outcast.
Big Boy
fame.
And Cedric the Entertainer. It's a joke I commonly reflect on because Cedric the Entertainer was in a lot of black remakes of... Just properties that didn't need a reboot.
Yeah, well, so this is Caddyshack.
Who's
except,
your caddy?
It's like a movie that they made the title first.
Yeah. But like the whitest title in the universe.
Well, that's what because it's white executives who give them money for this.
White
like,
directors and writers.
And, so they're just like, what are... I remember Tupac in an interview, he was making fun of the name he was given in like one of his films. He's just like, well, this is what they think black people call each other in the hood? Is this what they think?
I'm Scoopy.
Yeah, exactly. I guess Big Boy's kind of playing the Rodney Dangerfield part. He's the lower class rich dude, new money.
Bushwood Estates. But it has no real credit for Caddyshack, so I don't know. Because I know Soul Plane, which sort of started this, was a huge underground bootleg phenomenon. Because it got leaked really early in the early days of the internet. Like, that was huge. And they were trying to recapture that success. And Cedric the Entertainer is in, like, a Honeymooners remake.
Yeah.
He's in a Caddyshack remake.
It was a bunch of white executives searching for all the African-American dollars they could. And eventually, they just trust Tyler Perry to do it. It's like, look, you know what to do. We'll just...
But who's your caddy? Nobody saw this, but we had to get all these out of the way for the biggest movie of the week. I will say of the year. I love this movie. We're going to do a commentary for it. Lasertime, Patreon.com/Lasertime.
By the time this episode posts.
It'll be up there. I just can't wait to watch this with my talking Simpsons dogs.
Yes.
Here, listen to this.
How did the pig tracks get on the ceiling?
Spider pig, spider pig, does whatever a spider pig does. Can he swing from a web? No, he can't. He's a pig. Look out. He is a spider pig.
they joke.
I love spider pig.
The, just look of what is happening in my home.
It's an awful bark through up there.
Mm-hmm. Al Jean, one of the writers of the film, he joked that... They made the original writer of the Spider-Man theme so much money that year, thanks to that, because they did license it for the
orchestral version in the end credits.
So the Simpsons movie was a thing Simpsons fans had been waiting 17 years for.
At least. I think they said in the making for 7 years.
Yeah. It took them forever to do it. It seems obvious that
they were talking about it like when they're making like the first DVDs.
Yep. Yes. So my bigger theory about the making of this film is that they did all these all those DVD recordings in between meetings for The Simpsons. They're like, well, if you're here for the meeting, let's record a few DVD commentaries.
Yes.
But The Simpsons...
Well, I thought it was the other way. Like, they were all coming... Like, all the old writers were coming in to do the DVD commentaries.
Mm-hmm. And it probably got them saying, like, hey, remember we used to talk about
why don't we make a
movie?
And so, like, the movie, if you don't know the behind the scenes of The Simpsons, is kind of all the original great writers
of
the TV series 17 years after they kind of... pioneered the show and left.
After season 4, there was a huge writer exodus. After season 8, there was another one, and they were kind of bleeding writers throughout. But this got back the all-star cast of writers for a writer-driven show, so that's a pretty huge deal. But that also involved them overwriting the show. Like
they have
30. They have like around 30 minutes of deleted material that they just made for the movie, and that they
talk about it. We'll never do this again. It was so hard, and like I think you were overly meticulous.
I think
like,
so. I mean, Bob will have definitely voiced his concerns about this on the commentary that they didn't trust the fans enough, or they didn't trust their universe enough that they're like...
President Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, instead of Ramir Wolfcastle's Arnold Schwarzenegger,
instead of Hank Scorpio, you get Russ Cargill, played by A. Brooks. He takes the Albert out. Here's Russ Cargill.
He's always been known.
I'm afraid we lost them, sir.
Damn it! Well, then you find them, and you get them back in the dome. And to make sure nobody else gets out, I want roving death squads around the perimeter 24/7. I want 10,000 tough guys, and I want 10,000 soft guys to make the tough guys look tougher. And here's how I want them arranged. Tough, tough, soft, tough, soft, soft, tough, tough, soft, soft, tough, soft.
Sir, I'm afraid you've gone mad with power.
Of course I have. You ever try going mad without power? It's boring. No one listens to you.
Love that. There's
Albert Brooks improvises a lot. He's one of the only voice actors in The Simpsons that gets to do that.
I think it's been like 20 years since he appeared on The Simpsons.
Ooh,
Hank Scorpio is 10 years earlier. It's the season 8 opener.
Yes.
So, but yeah, the movie I'd been waiting a million years for, and it fulfilled almost all my dreams in that they did all the shit they can't do in a movie. On a show. Which you think on the show, they do everything. They have mobs of people. They have towns flooding. They have all this big budget stuff, but it never looked as good. And like when they, my favorite thing in the movie from an animation standpoint is when they have the Springfield mob, every character is a distinct character of hundreds. It shows you how many people
are. They're not
just
heads on like a blurry shirt.
Yes.
It was hard for me to see because, still, modern Simpsons is on an animation level jarring to me, considering how used I am to the hand-drawn Klasky Chupo film Roman look. But the movie, looking at it now, like, this looks way better than the show now. This is what an animated movie is supposed to look
like. It's still the tight kind of current Simpsons animation. They don't get too off model, but it also has, it wasn't just a bring back of all the great original writers. Mm-hmm. Three of the original directors are back for two. Rich Moore, David Silverman, and I believe it was Susie Dieter is the third director. All three of them direct like a third of the movie because they were producing it in a very weird way. Like it was TV people making a movie and they didn't really know how. Like they talk about there was constant rewriting, constant tinkering.
19 credited screenwriters.
They said they had the A room and the B room, with the A room writing the script, and then they'd have a B room of just other super awesome writers just writing new jokes. They're like, well, here's a new joke for this scene, here's a new joke for that scene. And they just they overdid it, honestly. But you can tell how much work went into it, and I appreciate that. After feeling like watching new episodes, then new episodes of The Simpsons in 2006 and 7, going like, they're just not trying anymore. To then see these guys are trying so hard, like that effort is appreciated.
And I think it's a great, funny film.
And I think the show got a bit of a bounce.
It brought the older guys back. And they stayed on. It was very strange because the movie was well reviewed. Simpsons fans liked it. Most of them who aren't Brett and Bob Mackey really liked the film.
I think it reinvigorated everyone creatively.
It did. But so then it made me watch the show again. So I watched the season premiere after that, and that's like the bad team.
Well, it was, it was produced during the making of the movie.
Yes.
It's not post-movie.
And I just remember it like squandered the faith I had in like being able to watch The Simpsons again. But then a few episodes later, like it's not what it was, and it never will be because
it can't be.
It doesn't exist in a biosphere of being the only good show on television. It just doesn't. But it's after that. I think that after the movie, I think it reinvigorated the show from henceforth.
Yeah,
I think it's been really good.
The other thing I loved about the movie is that it did things they couldn't do on TV in dirty ways.
But you saw Bart's dick.
It never didn't
his
go
doodle.
Besides that,
what
it didn't go too far.
Yes, it did.
I don't think it didn't go like South Park.
Oh
levels.
No,
you don't see Marge's bare breasts.
It's a PG-13 movie. They could have gotten away with Marge saying "fuck you" at some point.
True.
They didn't do it. There's
but
no
Homer flips everybody off.
I love that flipping
that
off.
Makes me so
and the
happy.
Only one I could get a sound clip of Marge breaks, and this is for the UK. This will mean nothing.
Yes.
But it is literally against the law to blaspheme
FCC
on television
like
in America today. And Marge got to say this.
I'm sorry. I said I wish you weren't my father.
I don't blame you, son. I wasn't much of a father. Maybe it starts with the way my dad raised me. Yes, it's clear to me. It's just been one long, unbroken cycle
of... Somebody throw the goddamn bomb!
I love that.
It sucks. If you're American, that should be jarring. You can't say goddamn on television. You will literally be fined by the government.
I see God. You can say damn. Yeah. You
can't say both
damn.
Together.
I do get goosebumps in that moment because they did... It's not just a series of goofy things.
Yeah.
It is an overarching story that leads to a satisfying action movie
it really
conclusion.
Is.
Yeah. It's really good.
I think it's an excellent television to film movie. I think it's an excellent animated movie. I think it's an excellent episode of The Simpsons. And just of all the things they do right in a movie, it's bigger, it looks better. And I have to feel, since they knew they were making it for almost a decade, they saved their voice actor because they said, well, who's the guest star of the film? Yeah. He's like... Well, we have the biggest actor in the world, and that's all they'd say for a long time. And so when I walked in, I didn't know who it was going to be. And this is a commercial they see, the Simpsons see after they've left Springfield for Alaska.
Are you tired of the same old Grand Canyon?
Here we are, kids, the Grand Canyon.
It's so old and boring. I want a new one. Now!
Hello, I'm Tom Hanks. The U.S. government has lost its credibility, so it's borrowing some of mine.
Tussle my hair, Mr. Hanks.
Sure thing, son. Now, I'm pleased to tell you all about the new Grand Canyon. Coming this weekend, it's east of Shelbyville and south of Capital City.
That's where Springfield is!
It's nowhere near where anything is or ever was. This is Tom Hanks saying, if you're going to pick a government to trust, why not this one?
Did you see that? Yes, they're going to destroy Springfield. But we're going to stop them. Homie, get your clothes on. Homie?
I'm happy here. Screw Springfield.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's Homer at his worst.
Like, no, Homer is his absolute worst because but it gives him something to be better than and reclaim and get better than. And I did love I was shocked by the Bart's doodle joke. That was such a
great
parody of it, of like the things obscuring it. And then nothing's obscuring it. It's just his dick.
They also did a great job of like a storyline they had done a half dozen times on Simpsons at least before.
Will Marge leave Homer?
But like Julie Kavner, reading that.
That's another thing because like Homer and Bart get like shock moments, whereas Lisa makes a noise that makes me laugh so much because I've never heard her make it in 20 years of the show when she meets her boy crush, and Julie Kavner, this performance of Marge, and I think that's part of it. They've done the storyline before.
Yeah.
So Marge has to act in a way that to me gives me goosebumps when I hear her
give
this
read. That breakup scene, they did it 100 takes. They made Julie
do it 100.
That's
right. You told me
that. And
that's
the last one
that she feels so tired. But you will never, ever, before or after, have heard Marge deliver lines like this. This is her definitively leaving Homer.
And to prove to myself that this is the end, I taped this over our wedding video.
Hi,
homie.
Yeah, that just gut-wrenching.
Oh, totally.
Delivery from Marge.
And I like that they put in Bird Suddenly Appear in there, which is, they kept it as their song. What shocks me is that they've never made a sequel. They almost
did. They say
they
won't.
They
Maggie
almost
promised.
Did. There was that episode. Yeah, Maggie did promise. Was the first
they
one,
they said they will when the show's over.
Well, they almost did. They held back that Kang and Kodos for real episode.
Awful episode.
It's such bad. I'm so glad that was the movie. They did,
but it should have been a movie. That should have been a premise where Kang and Kodos leave the Halloween universe and invade. And so they just blow it in 20 minutes.
And they did do an Oscar-nominated short.
Yeah, which is really good.
The Longest Daycare, which I wish it had won just so you could say, like, The Simpsons is an Oscar-winning show. I'd love that. But, yeah, the Simpsons movie, I also figured, well, not even the movie, the show's going to end soon. And it's a decade later.
Yep.
Still years off.
As of this recording, it's been renewed.
It's 666
I think
episode.
Somebody made a joke about it, but I think it's real. They just want to break every television record.
Yeah.
Well, why not? Just keep going at this point.
If they can still get money out of the network to go for it, I guess.
But I'm not in a position. I don't hate the new show. Every time I tune in, I always kind of dig it. So I hope it keeps going. It's a cartoon. It's perfect. But what do you not like about the film? And my big thing... No, Scorpio. Burns is, like, in the movie for 1 second.
Yeah.
It's really shitty. Yeah. Burns was such a great character, and now he's nobody on the show. And
I love that there's references and jokes I don't understand, which is just like when we were watching the show. Anything else you don't like about the film? The Simpsons nerdy level?
Nothing really. I mean, I remember just the marketing blitz for it when it came out.
That was nuts. It turned 7-Eleven into Quickie Marts.
Yeah, the 7-Eleven into Quickie Marts. Burger King had ads everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, then I remember watching those Burger King ads and seeing the detail of the burger that they drew. I was like, boy, they must have had so many notes on that burger. How many times they reanimate that burger?
I think that the movie made the pink donut kind of an icon for the Simpsons. I think it
was
so
great
on
every
poster. That's what you see.
And the and also the Simpsons game came out around the same time.
Yeah, a couple months later. Yeah, the holiday season.
To capitalize on this, it was Simpsons mania all over again. Oh,
awesome.
And I did love the opening of the movie is them watching the Itchy and Scratchy movie in standard definition.
Yeah.
And then Homer literally calls us idiots for watching a movie that
you can see at home for free.
You're all stupid, especially you.
And the title comes up. Man, I should have gotten that clip. God damn it. I really like this movie. I can't wait to come to its defense. Yeah. We haven't done the commentary yet, but it'll be available both on our Patreon and patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Where, again, Henry and I are on a show where we chronologically break down every episode of The Simpsons. I don't think I'm ready to do that for the movie just yet.
No, maybe we should just wait till we get to 2007 in 5 years.
There's some stuff I'm dying to dig into, but it just feels too early.
Man, how long will that episode be?
It would be a 3-hour-long episode if we did it the way we do the shows.
Yeah. It's just so fun. It's so fun. The
commentary is a great way to deal with it.
I would love them to make another film. I guess I'm done. I want to talk about this forever.
We've got other cartoons to talk
about.
That's
true, because in TV, during the week of the July 21st through the 27th, the 22nd, wow, it's been 10 years, Harvey Birdman's final episode airs.
Yeah, so
I love Harvey Birdman.
Harvey Birdman premiered in 2001. Its 39th episode was its final one, so that was 6 years to make 39 episodes. It had horrible production delays. Mm-hmm. The first, they did 3 episodes, and then they're like, this animation team sucks. And after 2 years with bad regular animation that took them forever, they then finally 9 episodes in, they're like, oh, wait, we can do this in Flash, and it goes much better, and they make it faster. So they do 30 more episodes. The final season is just 7 episodes long. They kill off Stephen Colbert's character in the start of the first episode of the season premiere. He comes back for the finale, and the finale is called The Death of Harvey Birdman, and he is dead at the end of the episode. In a joke, he's run over by a truck. Or a bus.
Yeah, but
so
just,
should we explain the entire premise of the
show?
It's reusing shitty cartoon animation, kind of like Space Ghost,
When you look back 10 years ago at Adult Swim, you have Space Ghost, which is reusing animation to make something modern and funny out of something old and cheesy. Then they had C-Lab, and then they had, to some extent, the first season of Venture Brothers operates in a universe that references Johnny Quest a lot. Ray Bannon's in like the third episode, and they stopped doing that.
But Harvey Birdman was sort of a spinoff of Space Ghost because Birdman was on an episode of it, and they named him Harvey in that.
Yeah, Birdman is another old terrible Hanna-Barbera character.
Right. But now he's an attorney.
It's still the last scenario. It's the last situation where this old Hanna-Barbera characters had any place to go.
So
it's been 10 years since that.
The best thing about it was also its biggest obstacle as well in production, in that they wanted to make fun of old Hanna-Barbera cartoons and kind of get postmodern and meta about it, and commented in a lawyer situation of just like, oh, hey, Squiddly Diddly, that's a weird name, right? Or McGill Gorilla's really annoying. Or isn't this strange about... So the biggest one was Fred Flintstone.
Or the Scooby. Scooby, they're arrested for getting high.
Yes, yeah. But the episode has... That's the problem, though, when they used... Characters more famous than Atom Ant. When they use characters
Peter
who were
Potamus.
Characters who were still being sold on shit, then they're told, well, they can't actually be high, and you have to end the episode by saying that the Shaggy and Scooby are not stoners, and it was all a big mistake. And that was the same in another the early episode, The Dabba Don.
I love that episode.
An amazing Sopranos parody of, except Fred is Tony Soprano, which he is. Fred Flintstone is Tony Soprano. But in the end of that, they have to...
Get a guy on the head with a bowling ball.
The creators of the show even admitted they're like, they told us we can't have Tony, we can't have him actually be a mob boss. Can we just say he, like, thinks he was? And then they're like, well, was there ever an episode where he gets hit in the head with a bowling ball?
Yes, there
and,
was.
And they're like,
right,
there were
was.
17 episodes. Like, so the show went on forever, but there's only 39 of them. But it's so hilarious. It is a whip fast speed.
Yeah.
And probably the breakout star. It had amazing voice talent all over the place. Padgett Brewster, mm-hmm. Gary Cole
is Harvey Birdman. Oh, good.
The brother of whatever the guy. The best guy is Stephen Colbert, yeah. though, who yeah. played both.
Mind taking.
Yeah, but also Phil Ken 7, his boss. This is my favorite Phil Ken 7 clip.
I'm Phil Ken 7. You may not know me, but I have $12 billion here that says you'll vote for me regardless.
Phil Ken 7, strength. Leadership, vision.
Oh, almost forgot. I've taken every drug known to man, and not just orally. Just getting that out there.
Paid for by the people that gave Phil Ken 7 $12 billion.
That's the best. That's, I think, my all-time favorite episode. It is their gun control one.
Wow.
Except it's about guitars in the place of guns, because it's an El Cabong. They arrest El Cabong, a.k.a. Quick Draw McGraw. And so then Quick Draw McGraw, though, is being played as Charlton Heston. He's just like, they're trying to take away
my guns, Baba Louie.
You can't take my guitar. And they also mentioned that...
And these characters are gone now.
Yeah. People are
gone.
Yeah, it's... They got many better jokes when they pick characters no one cared about. They're like, time for a speed buggy episode. They can do whatever they want. They can pick the character Devlin, who was a...
Devlin, the Evil Knievel ripoff,
and they can do anything they want with him.
They did Grape Ape.
They did Grape Ape at taking performance-enhancing drugs.
Wow.
There's so many great episodes, and it's, again, 39 11-minute episodes.
And it's everything those awful characters deserve, too. Yeah. It was the only way they could come back and shine.
And I was sad to see it go, but I was shocked they even made 39.
Yeah. They made a Capcom video game out of it using the Ace Attorney formula. Ooh. But I guess we got to move on from that, even though I don't want to. I love Harvey Birdman. July 22nd, The Kill Point debuts on Fox. It runs one season about an Iraq war vets who decide to become bank robbers. John Leguizamo and Donnie Wahlberg.
They seem above a summer Fox show in 2007.
But sometimes you can just look at those Fox shows and like just make this like two movies.
Yeah.
And like, this is not.
I'm guessing they
back.
Thought like these two guys thought like, oh, we're gonna do the Kiefer Sutherland.
I think it was that it was too expensive too, and then
this,
yeah,
again,
they robbed real banks.
This should make you feel ancient. The new host of The Price Is Right was announced July 23rd.
Yep.
A whole decade of Drew.
Yep.
Drew
Carey hosting The Price is Right.
This was still paunchy Drew, not
That was so funny to see him go between seasons from Drew Carey, in my mind, to skinny Drew Carey.
Yeah.
Be healthy, Drew.
This makes me feel old. A show I hated back when I could watch a show and hate. I hate it. Had time to do that. July 24th, Damages debuts on FX, a legal drama starring Glenn Close and Rose Byrne. Well-reviewed for its smart writing and twists of legal tropes. Had some big-name actors. Guest star ran for 5 seasons on FX. Still better than Nip Tuck, which is that was an awful show.
I haven't watched past the first season, but I did enjoy the first season. It's one of those I keep thinking, should I go back and
it's
do
really
that?
Just...
maybe I should.
Even if it's not well-written, though apparently it was, it's just fun to watch like Glenn Close acting her ass off.
Yeah, Glenn Close being a gigantic bitch.
like in this scene.
Who told you to do that? It was my own initiative. I thought we should follow...
Thought? Who told you to think? You are in this office to wait for instructions. You don't have license to think. You have jeopardized the only serious lead we still have. How could you be so stupid?
Jesus, Glenn.
Yeah.
It's Yelena Rose Byrne, who was just in last week's Sunshine.
Yeah, she's and up we there. Just had Glenn Close as vice president. Air Force One. So they're all over the place.
I do love like the mid-2000s when was it Meryl Streep in Devil Wears Prada, and Glenn Close just like I'm gonna be the most asshole-ish boss in the world.
Be the TV version of that.
Women can be bad bosses too.
But just having seen Glenn Close in so many things, she is up there on a list of people like I'd be terrified if I'd be chewed out by this lady.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen.
Oh my God,
I could handle almost anything. But not that. Finally on TV, July 26, season 2 of Stan Lee's Who Wants to Be a Superhero? Debuts on Sci-Fi.
This isn't licensed by Marvel. So going low-key.
Marvel doesn't pay me anymore.
This is so sad. I've watched a couple episodes of this. It is incredibly silly.
It's just like
and really stupid.
Those people on Hollywood Boulevard dressed up like Elmo in a show.
Season 2 stops pretending things are even real. That like a supervillain is in it. And there's like special effects. And you're supposed to go like, all right, okay.
Yeah,
this isn't real anymore.
It is like you come up with a superhero and you dress up as that superhero and you have little challenges.
And then you'll be the next superhero from Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Which never happened.
It's never happened.
And I believe
Celebrity Apprentice is run its season at this point. So you're looking for something new.
And the hero that won was The Diffuser, just for history's sake.
Jesus.
And Dave, you'll like this as a wrestling fan. Ooh. Back, this was on Sci-Fi Channel back when ECW was airing on Sci-Fi, and it was terrible. But they wanted to have ECW wrestlers appear on Sci-Fi shows. So the late Balls Mahoney appeared in one episode to teach them how to do stunts.
One of the jerk wrestlers.
That's Balls. Iron Balls McGinty.
Yes, no, Balls Mahoney was a wannabe Cactus Jack whose whole thing was like, I will smash you in the head as hard as I can with a chair, and you will smash me in the head as hard as I can with a chair. And guess what? He died last year in his mid-40s from brain damage and drug abuse.
Oh, big shocker.
We can't go there again. We'll have to move quickly into games. The 24th of July, 10 years ago, Final Fantasy II on PSP. I remember this creating a little more anger.
Okay, Final Fantasy II, and this is real II, not America's II.
Mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy II is trash balls, and you should never, ever play it. It sucks. The worst Final Fantasy.
If you like awful... Cheat, right?
Yes. Hey. What's the one like, well, I need to bring up my HP. Well, you don't... It's not traditional... grinding, it's that, well, if you take more hits, then you're tougher, so your HP goes up. So then you're intentionally hitting members of your party. It was... this doesn't get mentioned much when people talk about how Super Mario 2 and Legend of Zelda 2 were so different. Same with Final Fantasy 2. They're like, well, let's get weird. And this sucked. And like, Square thought it sucked, and so they actually took the dude who was the director of 2 and like just said... make the Saga series, and that can have all this dumb shit in it.
Yeah.
You're leaving Final Fantasy alone. So if you like Saga games, then maybe you will like Final Fantasy 2, but it sucks. And this PSP remake changed the graphics too much, and I didn't like it because I like old graphics.
dag nabbit.
And also Escape from Bug Island for Wii on the 25th, but who cares about that?
A very ugly Resident Evil wannabe that took a year to come out in America. It was a launch game in Japan, and they finally shoveled it out through some terrible game publisher.
And this wasn't the one with Billy Bob Thornton and...
No, that's Deadly Creatures. Escape from Bug Island is laughably bad, as I recall. I want to look up some videos.
I could not get 8-legged freaks out of my head. I hope we never have to talk about that. We're nearing the end of our show, people. Just so you know, we do another exclusive show for our patrons on patreon.com/lasertime. The people who support us get an exclusive show where we go through our comments and incorporate all of your feedback. It is fucking awesome. I love doing it.
Yeah.
But here's a sample from some of our discussions on the July 7th through the 13th episode of Full Metal Jacket. It prompted Awkward Loser to say, seeing an edited version of Full Metal Jacket that used maggot and scum to replace faggot and cum made me think scumbag is a condom. Also, it's so weird that Full Metal Jacket won Best Picture after Platoon.
No, the Academy... it did not win Best Picture.
Oh, it did not?
No,
the Academy
not.
Was on a real nom kick back then, I guess. I personally find both movies to be kind of to be the bad kind of unpleasant, unlike Saving Private Ryan, which is unpleasant but still mostly watchable.
I don't agree there.
I prefer Full Metal Jacket to almost anything.
It's one of my favorite war movies. I mean, Kubrick never... Did he ever win an Oscar?
No.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
too good for
go
Oscars.
No, he was nominated.
Not even for AI?
No.
But all right.
He was dead.
We are nearing the end of our show. We got to get some plugs out of the way. You can go to lasertimepodcast.com to find out more of our chicanery. We do a show called Laser Time, which is kind of like this, but topic-based. I got an episode about controversial songs and the long, hard road Spider-Man took to get to the screen. And I did a whole episode semi-recently about pop culture farts.
Yes.
I feel like we should have retired the brand after that. Yes. I still
have the candy versus spinning fart I'm trying to...
I still have it on the soundboard. That's a real... That is a real fart, technically.
Don't do that.
And if you liked all this Simpson talk we had here, well, we have a whole podcast of that with me and Chris and host Bob Mackey.
Wow.
Let's just hear it.
Yeah, let's just get out of the way.
Wow, Bob Mack.
So, yes, we do that every week where we go through each episode of The Simpsons from the beginning. We just passed the 100th episode. We are deep. Oh, we're almost done with season 5.
That's nuts.
And you can see even more awesome Simpsons stuff that we did on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. It's where Bob and I get paid directly to do this and make it our full-time job. It's what lets me do 302010, and I love doing it.
Woo-hoo. All right. And, Video Game Apocalypse starring... Mrs. Diana Goodman, Michael Raparez.
Yep. I'm so butch that he's Mrs. You've done that so many times.
I meant it the opposite way. Michael's so femmy, him and his beard, which is you. Sorry. We also have bonus time and a bonus show on our Patreon. We've done these plugs before, but let's get into the goddamn deaths, Diana.
All right. This week, 1997, we lost former Supreme Court Justice William Brennan. He was 91. He was a longtime liberal on the court voting on Roe versus Wade. And I did not realize he wrote New York Times versus Sullivan, which we should all thank him for. That's an important free speech in the media thing where it's like, if you criticize someone, they have to prove you're actually trying to get them. They have to prove actual malice and libel as opposed to just like, I didn't like that.
A fake judge. What does he know?
Yeah, exactly. And then in 2007, we lost Mohammad Zahir Shah. He was 92. He was the last king of Afghanistan.
Oh, shit, a real king.
He was a king of Afghanistan for almost 40 years.
And Forrest Whitaker movie?
Yes. If you try to figure out what the hell happened, it is really, really confusing, the history of Afghanistan and who was in charge. But I do love, he went out of the country for like cataract surgery and like, I think his nephew or someone just had a coup because he was out of town.
Wow.
They just took over the country.
You can't leave that throne when you're the king, man.
Dark reboot of Home Alone.
Exactly.
But with that, it's time for the birthday quiz. Who's ready? Go!
Oh, birthday is a doodle.
This is where we do a birthday quiz. Who was born this week, Diana?
Who was born this week?
All right.
July 24th, let's start with the ladies. July 24th, 1987. Whoa. Turning 30, part of this show. Her birth should be on the show. She's a writer and former actor who makes occasional appearances still, including on Broad City or Welcome to Night Vale, where she plays the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home. She's not old. She's 30. And she starred in 5 films, including A Simple Wish, Mrs. Doubtfire,
Miracle. Oh, Mara Wilson.
I think they got it.
Who finishes it first? That's not fair. He knew. You wouldn't have said anything.
I knew Mara Wilson.
All right. Happy birthday, Mara Wilson. All right. Number 2, born July 22nd, 1947, turning 70, in Beverly Hills, dropped out of college, changed his name, became a stand-up. His work in films include... a movie we talked about this episode, Out of Sight, Taxi Driver, Broadcast News.
Albert Brooks.
There you go.
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein. Really is his name. Because his parents are cruel. Yes.
His dad died on stage, literally.
Did he really?
He really did. His dad was a comic actor, and he was at a roast, one of the Dean Martin roasts, I want to say for Lucille Ball. He did his bit. He sat down. He died.
Jesus Christ.
He died.
Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Well, and I'll probably die doing these podcasts.
And his brother is Super Dave Osborne.
Super Dave Osborne. He's also
the worst voice of all time.
He's freaking hilarious. If you listen to him on an interview, oh my God.
Dave is just funny. Well, you can find out more at LaserTimePodcast.com or 302010.net if you want to limit it just this show. Again, we got a bonus show, patreon.com/lasertime. Let's go out with the Harvey Birdman thing. Harvey Attorney.
Do you really want to feel him? Harvey Attorney, habeas corpus, Marvy Attorney! Harvey Birdman, attorney at law!